welcome to the Creative Pen Podcast. I'm Joanna Penn, thriller author and professional speaker, bringing you interviews, inspiration and information on writing, publishing options and marketing ideas for your book. You can find the episode show notes, your free Author 2.0 blueprint and lots more information at thecreativepen.com. And that's pen with a double N. And here's the show. Hello, creatives. I'm Joanna Penn, and this is episode number 274 of the podcast. And it is the 16th of June 2016 as I record this, a little early as I am away on a friends and family trip this weekend, which should be good. So today I have an interview with KM Weiland, Katie, and we are talking about writer's block, which of course is not a monolithic thing, but rather it is different per situation. So we're going to go into all the different ways you can experience blocks and the ones that I've gone through and Katie's gone through, and also what to do about it. So I hope today is really useful creatively. And yeah, so that's good. In publishing news, I think the most interesting piece of news this week is Pixel of Ink just shut down. Now, this is quite monumental, really, for those of us who've been around in the ebook world. Pixel of Ink was probably one of the first discount ebook sites and was responsible for a lot of indie success early on. Of course, that was followed by a ton of other sites, including BookBub, which kind of obviously stole the thunder from smaller sites like Pixel of Ink. Fussy Librarian shut down, and a few months ago now, I think it was, and The Digital Reader reports on this as part of Amazon's crackdown on ebook promotion sites. Now they have Goodreads deals. So basically shutting down the competition. And I'm wondering why this, or I'm wondering if this is why BookBub is now starting advertising, because they can monetize in a different way and are not reliant on affiliate income. Now, affiliate income, if people don't know, is a percentage of sale when you promote other people's products. And it is a very common thing to do online. I make good money with affiliate income when you go to certain links. And even though you don't pay anymore, I get a percentage. I certainly use Amazon's affiliate scheme, and I recommend other people do as well. Of course, you have to be ethical about your affiliate things. So I only promote things that I actually use myself or recommend or people I know. And so that's why. But basically, Amazon, you know, has some rules around affiliate deals, and but they haven't cracked down on those rules until now. So I'm wondering if currently BookBub was also making money on affiliate links, but are now moving into advertising. Now, I am in the BookBub beta and currently trying a few links. I only just started it this week, so I don't have anything to report as yet. I should have more to report at the end of next week, so I'll talk about that, my initial thoughts. So that's probably the most interesting piece of publishing news. I think that we will see Goodreads becoming much more powerful in these ebook deals space. So yeah, definitely sort out your books on Goodreads. So in writing news, I actually have here right next to me the proof copy of The Successful Author Mindset in print, obviously. And I'm actually really proud of this one. I'm very nervous about putting it out. The fear of judgment is big. And in fact, there's a whole chapter on fear of judgment. but there's a whole load of my diaries in there, personal thoughts. It's a very personal book, but the advanced readers have all been saying it's like I'm reading their minds. So even though these things are personal to me, they clearly resonate with other people too, and we all experience the same issues on the writer's journey. So the book is launching on 29th of June, but is available for pre-order on the ebook stores now and will also be in print. Obviously, I'll also be selling the ebooks and audiobook direct from my website from the 29th of June as well. So watch out for that. And if you like the sound of my voice, except I won't be reading it like that, I'll be reading it in a proper way, then you can get that audiobook from me too. This week, I've also written the first draft of the short story, which is based around the Sunken Cities exhibition at the British Museum, set in the drowned world of Thonis Heraklion, which is an Egyptian city that disappeared under the waters back in the early hundreds AD, I think it is. And the story is based on the theme of fear. So that will go to my editor after I've been through it, adding some more layering for depth and depth, definitely, because it's about an underwater archaeologist. And but you won't get to read the story for a while because it's part of a Kobo managed anthology out at the end of 2017. So there you go. But it was quite fun to write, so I'm very happy with that. And coming up, if you want some more interaction as opposed to just me talking at you and reading out your tweets, I am finally biting the bullet on Facebook Live. My friend Mark Dawson has persuaded me that it is useful and maybe even fun. So even though I'm always a little nervous about doing live things, as I prefer to pre-record and edit, you can come along and ask me questions. It will be on the Creative Pen Facebook page. So that's facebook.com/thecreativepen on Sunday 26th of June at 3 p.m. US Eastern, 8 p.m. UK. So, and there's an event up on the Creative Pen Facebook page, so you can click that you're interested in the event and then you get a reminder. So yeah, Facebook Live, we shall see how that goes. It's interesting that they are really pushing video now on Facebook. And as I've noticed myself scrolling through the Facebook feed, you know, video really does catch your eye. So I'm going to see how that goes. Also, I hope it will be useful to people. That's kind of more the point. I've also been planning the second half of the year and booking flights and all the practicalities of getting to and from places, and I've just booked my flights and sort of confirmed all of that for Denver, Colorado, and then I'm flying on to Oregon after that. So now that is all set in stone, and then I'm actually coming back and flying to Israel the day I get back from Denver. So I'm really excited about that trip too. That is a end of days research trip. I'll be going to Megiddo, which is you know, the biblical Armageddon, and all the wonderful places in Israel. I'm very excited about that. But the reason I brought this up is because if you fancy coming along live, I'm speaking at the Digital Commerce Summit in Denver, Colorado, which I'm personally super excited about. Firstly, because it's a bit of a landmark thing for me, as I first learned online business and blogging from Brian Clark and the team at Copyblogger, who were running the event. So I get to meet some of my online heroes, and I'm going to be a total fangirl at the event with some of the very high profile speakers. And I kind of feel weird that I'm one of them, but very excited. So yeah, that's a big goal met for me. But also, it is a conference that I'm actually looking forward to sitting through. I'm at the point now where a lot of conferences, especially, you know, a lot of author conferences are aimed at new writers. And there's nothing wrong with being a new writer. If you are listening and you're a new writer, that's all great. But I also kind of crave learning new things from other people. So like the screenwriting course I was on last weekend, I'm a newbie in that area, so I love to learn that. Now, I'm not a newbie in the online space, but this conference is all about smarter ways to create and sell profitable digital products and services. And I'm speaking on books, the only session on books. The other sessions will be around, you know, creating products that sell, you know, using software as a service, from Laura Roeder, who does the awesome meetedgar.com, which I use for social media scheduling, how to do automated marketing funnels, social advertising, building membership sites, digital entrepreneur mindset, launching, and much more. And there's some really big name speakers. If you are in the, I think specifically if you're in the nonfiction space and you want to make money from courses, membership sites, other digital products, it will be really useful. And if you are a fiction author and you are a business-minded fiction author, then this will be useful for you too. So yeah, you can check it out at thecreativepen.com/Denver, D-E-N-V-E-R. And it is a live in-person event, 13th to 14th of October in Denver, Colorado. And yeah, super excited about that. So thecreativepen.com/Denver. Okay, so thanks as ever for your emails and tweets. I was particularly humbled this week to receive a number of private emails and private messages thanking me for publicly acknowledging my support for the gay community on last week's podcast. And it feels like a very small gesture, but I hope it helps others speak out as well. And I'm so glad it was helpful at this really difficult time. Sometimes the loud, noisy messages of hate seem to drown out the quiet appreciation and messages of support. I will not get political on this show, but I think it's really important as authors to support the members of our community who, you know, may be marginalised in many ways. So yeah, and it was quite similar to when I had Tololope Popula on the show, a Nigerian author. I had similar messages then of, you know, thank you for hearing the voice of someone who is, you know, a group who are not heard very often. So I know many of the listeners also have podcasts, so I hope you will start to expand the types of guests that you have on your show as well. So other messages that were publicly put out there. Paul Parsons says, listening to the last podcast had a massive revelation about my book, resisting the urge to simply quit work so I can write it. Paul, don't do that. I would suggest writing at the edges of the day. And as Toni Morrison says, and yeah. So good luck with your book. Sarah Painter said, love the interview with Claire Lydon. Thank you both. Tim Niederreiter says, the feeling of listening to the very chipper Creative Pen when not fully awake oneself is good. Puts me in the mind to get writing. Excellent. Get writing, Tim. Sounds like you're still in bed. Get up. Get writing. Jamie Arpin-Ricky says, I so appreciated your words of support and solidarity for the LGBTQ community in Orlando. Well said. Thank you, Jamie. Meg Cowley, listening to your podcast with Nancy Hendrickson, I wanted to be an archaeologist too. Never met anyone who wanted to be one. I actually think there's a ton of authors who wanted to be archaeologists. I think it's another one of those careers that you think suits quiet people who like sort of being on their own for a long time, because you basically get to sit in trenches hacking away at stuff. So yeah, I definitely always wanted to be an archaeologist. I'd still probably do one of those, you know, summers where you go and dig. I think I'd be up for that. Anyway, thank you as ever for your emails, comments, tweets about listening to the show. I really love getting them, so please do keep sending them. And I follow people back on Twitter when they tweet me, and I like them all. And so please email me or tweet me with what you're doing while listening to the show and any pictures of where you are, because I love the interaction and I love knowing people are listening from all over the world. So today's episode is sponsored by 99 Designs. You can get a power pack upgrade worth $99, which gives your project more chance of getting noticed by going to 99designs.com/Joanna. So on 99 Designs, you can get all kinds of designs for your author business, including book covers, merchandising, branding, business cards, illustrations, artwork, and much more. So how does it work? You decide on your project, describe it, and post it for all the designers to see. For example, an ebook or print book cover, a Facebook ad image, custom header for your author website, or a custom illustration, which I did for the map of Aotearoa, New Zealand, in the front of dark fantasy novel Risen Gods. At this stage, I'd also suggest you add as much detail as you can, for example, genre, as a dark fantasy novel and a romance novel are very different colour schemes, different images. You could also include examples of covers or other things that you like that are best-selling in your category. For the custom illustration, I gave very specific details about the places and images that needed to be on the map, like a tidal wave in Christchurch, as that ties into the story. Once you've posted your project, you will start getting designs, and it might be slow at first because obviously people need to work on it, but also some people do just wait for that very first design to be posted. Then the designs will come in thick and fast, and if you make it public, people will riff off each other, but you can also make it private so people can't see the other designs and you'll get more diversity but fewer variations. Then you can add comments and feedback and stars, and the designers will come back with more iterations. You can also create a poll to your audience or email list. Then you decide on a shortlist and finally the winner. You only pay if you're happy and you get the designs. And it's actually a super fun process. I've enjoyed I've done the two custom illustrations, the map and the key to the gates of hell, which was really super fun. I love kind of picking people's creative brains, so that is really good. So you can get a power pack upgrade worth $99, which will give your project more chance of being noticed by going to 99designs.com/Joanna, J-O-A-N-N-A. Right, so this corporate sponsorship pays for the hosting and transcription, but my time in producing the show is primarily sponsored by you guys. So a big thank you to all the people supporting on Patreon, and especially new patron Kevin Partner. And I also recorded the June Patreon supporters only Q&A this week, and I sent that out. So if you are a supporter, you will have got that Q&A. And as ever, I really appreciate your support. Like the tweets and emails, it demonstrates that you enjoy the show and want it to continue. And if you'd like to support me on Patreon, you can go to patreon.com, patreon.com/thecreativepen. And you can even just do $2 a month and get that extra monthly Q&A. Right, let's get on to the interview. Hi everyone, I'm Joanna Penn from thecreativepen.com, and today I'm here with KM Weiland. Hi Katie.
Hi, thank you for having me today.
Oh, no worries at all. Just a little introduction. Katie is an award-winning and best-selling historical and speculative fiction author. She also writes non-fiction and runs the popular site helpingwritersbecomeauthors.com. And today we're focusing on her book, Conquering Writer's Block and Summoning Inspiration, Learn to Nurture a Lifestyle of Creativity, which is a fantastic title.
Yes, thank you. Sometimes actually I get writer's block more on titles, I think, than I do on anything.
That is a really good point, and we might come back to title later. But I wanted to just start by, I guess, asking you a bit more about you and your writing background, because we've known each other online for years. We've done video interviews before, but just give everyone a sort of overview of who you are and what you get up to.
Yeah, well, I like to say that stories are my language. So it's one of those things that's, I've always been a storyteller. My earliest memory is actually of myself up in a treehouse at a family reunion telling myself a story. So it was just sort of an introduction to go into writing fiction. I write primarily fantasy and historical fiction, and usually some kind of weird combination of both of them. And I have 4 novels out now. And I also do a lot of nonfiction writing how-to for authors. So I have 8 nonfiction writing how-to books out now, I think, at this point. And it's pretty much just an outgrowth of my website, Helping Writers Become Authors, which is, you know, something I started just kind of share my writing journey, and it just kind of took off, and it's something where I'm able to really explore more of the craft for myself as much as others, and then turn that into the books that I do.
Which is fantastic. And I just wanted to ask you there, because I mean, I have my own thoughts on this, but what do you think is the difference between a writer and an author? And why did you call you? Because your website wasn't always called that, was it? You changed the title of it.
That was Helping Writers Become Authors was actually the kind of the little subtitle there for a long time. It was originally called Wordplay. And then when I finally went ahead and bought my own domain name, I realized at that point, you know, that Helping Writers Become Authors was a much more pertinent title that made, you know, more sense to people who were actually looking for what I was doing. But as for writers versus authors, really, it's just kind of semantics. But I think a lot of people consider, you know, anybody can be a writer. You know, you scribbling and you're a writer. But for a lot of people, I think author is more of a professional title where they take it, you know, a little bit further in their intent on getting published and getting paid for what they're doing. So for really, my intent is that you're taking something that is kind of a hobby and an interest and turning it into something that is really more something you're trying to be professional about and that kind of thing.
No, and I agree with that. And I guess, you know, at the end of the day, the author has a book. So yeah up until that point. Although I think people with one book often struggle even to say they're an author. Maybe it takes 2 or 3 before you really feel it.
Yeah, but I think I don't agree with. I encourage people, you know, if you're writing, you know, you should be able to claim that title, because really all the rest of it is just subjective success, you know, that we think we have to get to. And a lot of it isn't something that I think are actually the individual's priorities. So if you want to be a writer and you're writing, you are a writer. And if you want to be an author and you're pursuing this in a professional way, then as far as I'm concerned, you're an author.
Ah, there we go. Excellent. Okay, so today we're talking about writer's block, which I've had a few emails about this recently and was really glad to see you have a book on it. But I wanted to say, so up front, writer's block is not like a monolithic disease with one cause, one cure, and we're going to go into detail. But let's start, you know, what does writer's block feel like? You know, how do people know that they have it as such? And why is it so pervasive in the writing community?
Well, I think, you know, like you say, it's kind of just this feeling. It's this nebulous black cloud kind of thing that is kind of hard to define. You know, people, it's just something's not working. And but I like that you bring it back to a feeling, because we all, even though we may not know what's causing it, what's going on here, we all know what that feels like. We know that feeling. And it's something that's very easy for us all to identify with. I like, I know you've read Stephen Pressfield's wonderful Art of War, War of Art, rather. And I love how he describes, I don't know if he actually describes it as writer's block, but he talks a lot about resistance. Mm-hmm. And it's this feeling that I think everybody can relate to. It's just this feeling you can't move forward. Something's holding you back. And I think that's the essence of writer's block right there. And it's just kind of this lost feeling, like you don't know how to move forward. So for me, I find that really the root of writer's block and being able to identify what's going on all starts with being able to find the right answer, because you're asking the right question. Because if you can find the right question, it's like finding that loose end that you can kind of pull and the whole thing unravels. And I think that's where a lot of the nebulousness and the lost feeling comes from, is just because you don't know what's going on. And if you can figure out what's going on by asking the right question, then the whole thing suddenly becomes clear and you're not blocked anymore. But I think that creativity is a hard thing. It's something, you know, if it was easy, we wouldn't be having this conversation. We probably wouldn't have jobs, really, when it comes down to it, because I think it's something that is really difficult for all of us for a lot of reasons. There's a lot of fear involved a lot of times and a lot of uncertainty, and that's where that resistance comes from. So if we can figure out how to conquer that, that really helps us move forward and be able to find those right questions that are going to help us unravel our personal blocks that are getting in our way.
Yeah. And I mean, that feeling, I think we all do understand, but when is it just, there are a number of things it could be: laziness, procrastination, you know, just being tired. How long would, you know, should I, and it's, these are all terrible, and of course these are all opinions, but how long is it before you can say, yeah, I'm really blocked? Like, if people, someone just sits down and like an hour of going, oh, I don't really know what to write, that's not block, right? It's got to be a sustained period.
Well, I think that there's different levels of writer's block, definitely. I think, you know, there's the minor blocks where you sit down for a day and you don't know where you're going, you're running into a story problem. You know, that is writer's block to an extent. It's just, we don't always think of that when we think of capital W writer's block, because it's something that's relatively easy to overcome. So the bigger blocks are usually, I find, much deeper personal issues. Like I kind of said, you know, fear is a big one, you know, that's holding people back, whatever, for whatever reason, for whatever personal reason. I don't know that there's, you know, literally a time period that we can put on block. I think, you know, it's a very personal experience. So for each person, you know, depending on how long this is going on and how dramatic it's starting to feel, and the more resistance you're feeling, and the harder it's going to be to overcome. But I would say, you know, if you're struggling for more than a couple of weeks, you know, if you're someone who tries to write on a regular basis and it's just not coming after a couple of weeks, then, you know, that's writer's block, and that's definitely something that you have to address it as writer's block and get down to it and start looking for the causes, the root causes that are obviously not there on the surface for you.
Mm. So let's start with, you know, and there are different ones at different stages of the journey. So first time author, and I mean, I wind the clock back, like when I first met you, you know, I was writing nonfiction, and I really do feel I had a block around the fact that I could write fiction. Like I was like, I could never write fiction. I don't have enough ideas. And it's so funny now, you know, but I really believed that, like I'd never have any ideas. I don't know how to write fiction. Like, you know, how do I even start? So if first-time authors or people writing their first book say they have writer's block, what are some of the practical ways they can fix some of those issues as a first-time author?
That's kind of interesting, actually, that you say that, because honestly, I had never considered that, you know, non-writers at that point would have writer's block. So that's actually a very interesting point of view on that. I think it comes down to kind of what we were talking about just people dealing with fear issues and what's connected with that. And I think, you know, people who say, I could never be a writer, I will never have enough ideas, I think that absolute negative statements like that are almost always wrong. So there's an absolute positive statement for you, because they're based on fear. They're based on things like that just that nebulous feeling of resistance rather than an actual logical fact. So if you can just put aside that whole mindset that I could never do this and actually start exploring what's involved in doing it, then suddenly you kind of have a little roadmap for moving forward. And this is something that I recommend for writers in all stages. You know, I'm a big proponent of outlining and preparation. If you know, you know, what you need to do to move forward, if you can take kind of that overwhelming big picture and break it down into smaller steps so that you know what you have to do first, suddenly the whole thing becomes so much easier. Once an object in motion stays in motion. So if you can get going and know how to move forward, then everything becomes, I mean, it's still hard. It's still the same amount of work, but it becomes so much easier because at least you have a plan. And you know where you're going. So for authors who are just starting out, that's definitely something that I recommend. You know, if you don't know what you want to write, if you don't know, you don't have any idea how people do this, then just sit down and start learning about it. Start learning about the craft. Start paying attention as you're reading novels and watching movies. And, you know, start just making little notes. Take it one little bite at a time. Until you have enough, you know, material and ideas that you're able to then go ahead and start actually preparing an outline or something, or going ahead and writing that first chapter. You know, if you're someone who's more inclined to pantsing it than you are to preparing it.
Mm. And perhaps it's also like when you don't even know, you know, when you're right at the beginning there and you don't even know what you're doing, it's learning, but it's also understanding that the book doesn't emerge fully formed from your mind to the page.
So yes, exactly.
What you write is a load of crap.
Yeah, I think people put so much pressure on themselves to be perfect, and that's baloney. You know, I love the Ernest Hemingway quote where he says, "We are all apprentices in a craft that no one ever masters." Mm. Because first of all, it takes all this pressure off of us to be perfect. You know, if even Ernest Hemingway felt like he was never perfect, then certainly, you know, we have a little leeway there to work in. And also it's, you know, to me, it's really exciting because it's this continuing journey where there's always something new to learn and experience. And that's exciting. You know, it doesn't have to be frightening. It should be really exciting. And I think if writers can embrace that part of it, that it's not a scary thing anymore. It's a really cool thing.
Yeah. And I both of us, I think, believe that this is a learned skill. This is something you can learn and improve at. This is not something you're just born as this perfect writer.
Yeah, definitely. I think, you know, talent does play a certain, or aptitude, let's say, does play a certain role in it. But I definitely believe that passion and discipline are the ultimate factors in any writer's success. Because if you have those, then you're going to come back and again and again and make it work. You know, we've all heard the statement about how someone with a ton of talent is never going to reach the same level of success as someone with a small amount of talent, but a ton of discipline and passion for what they're doing.
Mm, and hard work over years. That's what I'm relying on anyway.
Yeah. Same here.
Okay, so that's a kind of, beginning writer. They can learn. They can obviously find out lots on your website and on my website about these things. So let's take the kind of next level of block, which is an author who's in the middle of a book. And I think this is quite a common one, isn't it? So they might have lack of plot ideas. They might be bored, bored with their own book. They might be trying to create a 90,000 word book out of a novella size idea. So what are some of the other sort of blocks mid-book, and how can people deal with those types of things?
Well, I think, again, in solving them, it always comes down to figuring out what is the source of the problem. And I mean, you just listed a ton of great ones, and they're all different, and they all have different resolutions, really. So, the first step is always figuring out, why am I blocked? Why am I feeling this resistance? And I think sometimes it's obvious and sometimes it's not. If you're running into a story problem and you just have no idea how to move forward, that's pretty straightforward. But sometimes if you're bored, or like you say, trying to, expand word count or something, it's not always clear right away why you're struggling. Sometimes we're in denial, we don't want to be bored with this story that we've worked on for so long. So we have to be really honest with ourselves and really dig down deep and kind of just follow that resistance until we find its root cause. And like I said, once you find that, it's like so exciting. I think there's nothing worse than not knowing what's wrong. It's like a lot of people are overwhelmed in the revision stage. They feel like, oh my gosh, this work I have to do, and it's just, I don't know where to start, and it's horrible. And I totally feel that. You start getting in all your suggestions from your editor, and it's just like, oh my goodness, this is, I don't know what to do. But as soon as you like break that down and you have a path forward, that's exciting. I think works, having a ton of stuff you have to do is great. That's not what causes resistance. What causes resistance is you don't know the first step forward, and you don't know how to, all that work and actually do something productive with it and make it better. So what I always recommend is, ask yourself lots of questions. And what I like to do is actually sit down with a notebook and a pen, because there's just something about writing longhand for me that really kind of just frees my creativity and interact. I'm asking myself lots of questions. Why am I struggling with this? Why? Or if it's a plot problem, what's going on here? What can I do to fix it? And don't censor yourself, because you're wanting to throw all the stupid ideas, all the surface ideas out there, so that hopefully you can dig down and find the one that's actually going to present you with a solution. Mm-hmm. And I will say that sometimes too, when you're in the middle of a book and you're blocked and you don't know how to move forward, sometimes you just need to take a break. Sometimes it's just burnout. Sometimes your conscious brain is kind of overworked. I mean, I don't know how many times where I've been stuck on something in a story and trying to move through it. And I've worked on it and worked on it all day. And then I just forget about it and go to bed. And suddenly the next morning, my subconscious has dug it up and the answer is right there in front of my face. So sometimes if we can just give ourselves, a little bit of space, I think that's huge in allowing us to then be able to kind of work through our issues and come to the solution. Oh, and I will say, don't be a drama queen about it. I see so many authors who are, I've got writer's block. It's the worst. Yeah, exactly. The worst thing in the world. And, this is just part of the business, to whatever to kind of learn to take it in stride and say, oh yeah, today I'm blocked, let's work on that today. Instead of it being this horrible life crisis, then it's much, much easier to manage.
Yeah, so I wanted to ask there about the kind of finishing energy and that, in the middle, because I've been thinking about this recently. Like, a lot of people have great starting energy, they like start the book and it's really exciting. And then that boredom can set in if they don't have finishing energy. And I wondered about your opinion on when should you, or should you ever, give up on finishing a story? So, getting through that boredom part for me, and I hit it, I think everyone might do, is I just have to get through it and write a good scene, or just, grin and bear it, basically. But do you ever think that people should give up on a story? Or is that just, block, writer's block winning?
I think that's a really, really good question, because sooner or later, that's an issue that we all have to face. I definitely, you know, my standard advice to people is always, you know, finish the book, because I think there's no more important habit for a writer than getting into the habit of finishing. Because once you finish a manuscript, 99% of the problems can then be fixed. But I do think there are exceptions. There are definitely exceptions where, for whatever reason, a book just isn't working. It's not working for you, and you just kind of have to cut your losses and move on. And generally, I would still recommend that people actually finish, you know, the manuscript if at all possible, because a lot of times the things that you're facing in the middle, you know, you may work through them and get to the end, and they may then be salvageable over the long run. But there comes a time where you just have to realize that for whatever reason, a novel isn't working. You know, it could be fundamentally broken. I had a story like that a couple of years ago that I mean, I loved the story. I really did. And I finished the manuscript, but I couldn't get it to work. It was fundamentally broken in what I wanted to accomplish and how I would have to actually do that. And then there's times when you do lose interest. And I think, you know, there's a point where, like you say, we all get bored with the book after a certain point. And you have to be able to differentiate between just that standard boredom and just a general, I have zero passion for this project anymore, and being able to then move on to something that's more productive. Mm. But I think, you know, you have to be really careful with that, because people get hung up on the, you know, the resistance of it. And it's so much easier to quit rather than to keep going. And it's easy to make excuses about why, you know, you would be better off if you moved on to what seems like a new and more exciting story. So you have to be really aware of the habits that you're creating in the choices that you make and whether or not to finish a story. Because getting into the habit of completing novels is that's the whole biz right there. If you can't do that, then you're not, frankly, an author, because you're not putting in the effort and the work to really make this, to really see it through. And I think, you know, it's so easy to get in the habit, to get into bad habits of not finishing. And you have to be really careful with that, because you don't want to put yourself in that position where you're breeding these habits that are really going to come back and bite you in the long run.
Mm, yeah, it seems like if you give up on one book or one story or nonfiction book or whatever, it's then easier to give up on another one. And that's how people end up with like five unfinished books in their drawer. And I think that finishing energy, and I mean, you've mentioned discipline, and you know, I think I read like a definition of discipline is something to do with punishment. And I was thinking about this, I was like, oh, it's kind of got negative connotations. But then I was like, do you know what? The punishment is not finishing the book.
That
is the punishment, isn't it? So because you then feel like a bit of a failure because you haven't finished it. Mm-hmm. And also you don't have this thing that could potentially turn out to be life-changing for you and also other people. So I think that, you know, really attacking that block, that, you know, the lack of finishing energy or boredom, like that's where you have to work it through, get it done. And then you can pay an editor to help you make, you know, fix it, can't you really?
Yeah, I totally agree with that. It's a very slippery slope to start down if you give in to the resistance.
Yeah, definitely. Okay, so then let's talk about the author who has finished a book. And especially at the moment, what's really interesting with the indie community is this, you know, you must write lots of books type of feeling. And, you know, of course, we all know that you can't just write one book every year and expect to make a living. But I think the number of people who are burnt out is increasing dramatically. Mm-hmm. So, you know, and often, like when I finish a novel, you know, I often feel I am completely empty. I will never have another idea. And I think that's quite common. So how do people fix that emptiness, the sort of block of starting again?
Well, it's interesting actually that you bring that up, because that's something that's really been on my mind on a personal level here lately. And I've been fighting that too, to some extent, that feeling of burnout and just trying to, you know, really keep my life balanced. And I think the secret is you have to know your priorities. And I think this is where a lot of, like you say, the people in the indie community right now are struggling, because we've taken this thing that we love, you know, this art, this creativity, and we've turned it into a business, a career, which is awesome. You know, it's such an exciting time to be a writer because of that. But I think that it's so easy for the business side to take over, for, you know, the pursuit of monetizing our art to take over, because we all have to live, and because there's such a feeling of success in being able to do this with our art that it wants to take over. And sooner or later, so one day you wake up and you realize that basically you're back in the rat race, because all of your focus is on the business side rather than the creative side. So I think it's really, really important for people to know their priorities. And if their priority is the business side, which is great, and that's totally fine, I'm not in any way saying that that's a bad thing. But if that's where their priority is, then, you know, churning out a couple of books a year or more, that's, you know, that's where they're going to have to be. If their focus ultimately is on the art, you know, is on the just the act of creativity and producing their fiction, then they're going to have to take a step back and realize that the art and the business are two separate things. And you have to really make sure that you're protecting the art side from the business side. And this is something that I really focus on pretty much every single day, is making sure that I've created this space where the creative process is protected from all of the demands of actually, you know, making a business out of it and marketing it. And because all that stuff, I mean, it takes over your day, and it can also take over your intent for what you're actually wanting to do with your fiction. You decide, oh, I need to write romance because that's where, you know, the largest readership is, and I need to write more books every year. And none of those are bad things, but you have to make sure that you're doing them because they line up with your priorities and what you want out of your artistic career. So once you've done that, it really gives you a better perspective of, you know, whether you're failing or succeeding in different areas. And so you can kind of make adjustments. We think it's important that we have to pace ourselves because, you know, like kind of like we were talking about before we started, we, you know, if you're a workaholic, it just, you just feel like you have to be moving 110 miles all the time, and you don't. You know, once you've got, you know, your systems in place and your business is, you know, self-sufficient to some degree, then you can back off from that a little bit and make sure that you're nurturing the creative side, which is really the whole point. And if you lose that, then you lose the whole point of, you know, everything that you've been trying to succeed at. So I think it's really important to nurture that love of stories and to take care of your body. It's, you know, we all know that, I know this is something that you talk about a lot, is, you know, sitting at a desk is not the healthiest lifestyle. So we have to be really careful that we're not sacrificing important things, you know, like our love of our stories and our physical health, and that we're creating a good balance of all of these things in our lives.
No, I think that's exactly right. And I actually did think of you this weekend while we're talking about work, because you're a Christian, aren't you? A person of faith.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yes. And I was actually at a church service yesterday, and I was reading, my favorite book of the Bible is Ecclesiastes.
Mm-hmm.
And I found this Ecclesiastes 2:24 says, there is nothing better than to enjoy food and drink and to find satisfaction in work.
Yes.
These pleasures are from the hand of God. And it was so funny because I was sitting there thinking, I need, you know, I've got so much work to do. And I think I've just taken 2 weeks holiday, and it's really important to have a break. But then I read this and I was like, do you know what? We are meant to work. That is what one of the joys of our life is, to find work that we love. And so I feel very grateful about this. The problem I see is the rebalancing. So I don't think there ever is balance. I think,
yes.
I think we're constantly lurching from one side to the other of like, oh, I need to look after my creativity. And then, oh, I need to look after my business. And then, you know, and then like, oh, I need to have a rest. And so I feel like this, you know, this balancing is, you know, potentially, I mean, Ecclesiastes is thousands of years old, you know, book, and that this is clearly something that has always been a problem for people in general.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. It's constantly is a recalibrating kind of defined, to incorporate new things that you're trying to do and to find the new balance. And but I also like, you know, in Ecclesiastes is the famous verses about there's a time for everything. So I think that that's really pertinent as well, in that, you know, most of the time is the time to work and to enjoy, you know, like you say. I mean, I love my work. I love what I do, and I feel so blessed to be able to do it. And then there's also a time, you know, to step back and reflect and take care of other areas of your life. So it just kind of depends on where you're at and what you're doing and and what you need to focus on at whatever place in your life you're at the moment.
Yeah. And as that applies to writer's block, it's like, okay, you know, if today it really just isn't working, then fair enough. Like, go have a coffee, chill out, whatever.
Yeah, take a walk. Yeah.
Yeah. But if tomorrow the same thing happens and the next day and the next way, then, you know, I'm sorry, just sit there and do the work.
Yes, I totally agree with that. That's a really good way to put it.
Yeah, like, yeah, we, and it's very difficult, again, isn't it, to keep these things in check. But probably my number one tip for this is set a deadline.
Yeah.
And then just, like, do it. I mean, how have you ultimately overcome some of your personal blocks around these things?
Well, for me, I always say that schedules are my secret weapon, which is something that's really important just in general, you know, in making writing a business and making sure that you're, you know, doing everything that needs to be done, being responsible and accountable. But it's definitely true, you know, in my writing itself, that I learned this really early on, and I'm so glad I did because it made all the difference, was that if I did not make my writing a priority every day, nobody was going to do it for me. And nobody was, you know, going to help me respect my own writing time if I didn't do that. So that was something that I did really early on, was kind of just carved out 2 hours in my day and just made it sacrosanct to my writing. And, you know, it, there's a point where you have to protect, after other people kind of get the idea that you're, you know, you're not available during this time, they'll leave you alone. And then it becomes really, you're protecting it from yourself as much as anyone, so that you're not, you know, goofing off on the internet or, you know, pursuing something that's meaningful, like the business side. But that isn't what you're supposed to be doing, you know, which is the really hard stuff of actually, you know, creating fiction. So I think for me, creating these schedules and then getting into the habit of doing them and sticking with them has been huge. Because when you get in the habit of showing up at your desk at a certain time of the day, every single day for years, I mean, it becomes second nature. It's like getting up in the morning and having breakfast. And you don't think about it. You don't fear it. You don't dread it. It's just something you do. And you sit down and you're going to write, whether you are just flooded with inspiration or whether you're dealing with a block. You're going to keep moving forward because all of these wonderful habits are in place. I really love Somerset Maugham's quote about how, I only write when I'm inspired. And I make sure that I'm inspired every morning at 9 o'clock.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, to me, that's how it works. You know, I don't know. I have never sat around and waited for inspiration. Because first of all, I feel like inspiration is always there. We just have to tap it. I think when people talk about, oh, I can only write when I'm inspired, what they're really talking about is more of a mood kind of a thing. And personally, I do not want to be dependent on my moods for how consistent and productive and disciplined I am or how inspired I am. And I will say that I have never stopped writing because of writer's block. Even when I'm dealing with something that just isn't working and I'm really struggling, I always show up at my desk. I always keep going. And I work through those writer's blocks so much more quickly than I would if I just kind of sat back and wallowed in it and did nothing to actually work through it.
Yeah, I totally agree with you on that. And I wanted to come back on inspiration, because as you were talking there, I was thinking that, you know, I just finished a novel and I'm writing a nonfiction book right now, but I'm starting the process of inspiration for the next novel. And for me, that involves travel. It involves a lot of research. I read a lot of books. You know, I write a lot of notes. I think you have to fill your head with stuff so that you can then create from that. Like, you can't create from a completely empty mind. So what are some of your recommendations for getting inspired? Because there's a lot in your book, even though, you know, it's partly to do with blocks, it's also to do with being inspired, isn't it?
Yes, because ultimately, I think, I mean, writer's block is the problem, inspiration is the antidote. So if you can find inspiration and these systems of, you know, creating inspiration in your life on a regular basis, then you don't have to worry about writer's block. But again, this is something actually that I have been thinking about a lot in my own life lately, which is what I call discovering the wonder in life. And it's something that sadly I have seen decrease in my life, you know, as I get older. I mean, when I was a child, my stories were there with me all the time. And I miss that as an adult, that, you know, I'm busy thinking about other things, about, you know, work and the business side and, you know, things that, you know, aren't as important to me as the actual creativity and the pursuit of inspiration. So that's something that as an adult, because it doesn't come as naturally as it did as a child, it's something that I have to focus on deliberately and make sure that I'm structuring into my life. And one of my favorite ways to do that is I love, it's spring now, it's getting warmer, so it's the warm time of the year here. And when I can go outside at night and have like a fire pit and the full moon and music playing in the background, to me, that's what I call like my dream zone. That's my magic spot, where I can just kind of sink into my my subconscious and let my imagination just kind of take over. And that's where I find, you know, just the really interesting and special ideas for what I'm doing. Because I feel like it's not that my conscious brain isn't totally capable of coming up with, you know, great ideas. But that's, I think, where the really special and interesting things, you know, just kind of well up, because they're not in any way harnessed by an outside stimulus that my conscious brain is filtering. And Robert Lee Brewer, if you're familiar with him, he has a really great book called From Where You Dream. And he talks about kind of the same thing, but getting into what he calls the dream zone and really using that to kind of just fuel your inspiration. So that's something that I try to do on a regular basis. I also try, you know, to let go of the stress of thing, whatever it is that's, you know, involving my mind in things that really aren't that necessary, and instead trying, you know, to go in the other direction and follow more of the creative thing, so that it's there with me all the time, every day. And it just feels like a really healthy, energizing thing. So if I can tap into that, then I never have to worry about the whole resistance side or the writer's block side of things.
Mm. And I mean, you mentioned scheduling, and I diarize everything as well. And I do find, especially given what you and I do, which is the nonfiction and the fiction, that I need to schedule them separately. Like if I, you know, I almost need to not do anything on my blog or the podcast or interviews like this, or, you know, I kind of need to be JF Penn completely separately to my nonfiction and business work. And it's not a quick, to me, that bit, like you're saying, that getting into the dream zone, it's not a quick process. Like I think that's the bit before you've done the outline or before you start writing. Like you actually need quite an intense or longer period of just thinking, don't you, and letting your brain have time.
Yeah, definitely. For me, in my creative process, it tends to be a little bit slower than a lot of people's. But I get an idea, and it usually sits in my head for a long time. You know, I'm busy on other things, you know, working through other deadlines and projects and books. So I've got my ideas sit in my head for years sometimes, which I love. It's like this period where they just kind of get to, you know, be in this warm, safe place where they can grow and really mature, and I can see, you know, what interesting directions it's going to go in that I know I would never discover if my conscious brain just totally took over and started constructing a story. So I love it when it gets to just sit in the back of my head for a couple of years, and I'll, you know, take it out and kind of play with it every now and then and add new stuff to it. And then by the time I'm actually ready to start outlining, you know, I have generally a pretty complete idea of the story and lots of different scenes that I want to work on. And then I can just kind of start my outlining process by connecting the dots between all of these things and figuring out how they all fit together. But the longer that it can kind of sit around in my brain and be a part of this dream zone kind of a thing, then the better stuff I actually have to work with by the time I sit down to write.
Mm, No, I definitely agree with that. And we're running out of time. We could talk about this forever. but I did just want to ask you briefly about longevity. As I mentioned just to you before we started recording, you know, I've known you online, I think, since we both kind of started with our blog, sort of 2008, 2009-ish. I think we, you know, met on Twitter or something back then, and we were both nominated, I think, for the top 10 blogs for writers. Mm-hmm. I think it was 2011.
Wow.
Yeah, I think it's kind of, I know, we're just so old in this career now. But I wanted to ask about, you know, how do you ensure longevity in both a creative career and a sort of online career? And how do you keep inspiration going for that, for the long term?
Well, I think that for me, definitely what I have been learning, and, you know, as you say, it's always kind of a period of readjusting, constant readjusting, as you're always learning new things and having new experiences. But I think for me, definitely, like I've kind of said, you know, it's really important to me to know what my priorities are and to make sure that I'm filtering out the static of everybody else and, you know, kind of what the world is telling you your priorities should be. So that I'm always very focused on making sure that I'm lined up with what I actually want to accomplish and that I'm not, you know, letting myself feel bad or pressured or whatever because I'm not measuring up to someone else's standards. So to me, that's always the first step, because if I'm chasing my tail trying to fulfill something that I don't actually believe in, then I think that's the fastest track to burnout and dissatisfaction, just the whole thing not working and coming down. But as far as, you know, actually writing and achieving longevity in that, again, I think for me, making sure everything's scheduled so that everything has its spot, that the fiction has its spot. For me, it gets precedence. It's the first thing I do in the morning. And so that's kind of my morning work before I look at the internet, before I do anything, so that it's a very calm and a kind of a peaceful period of my day where I can just, you know, focus on energizing this story. And then having, you know, the schedule for the nonfiction and for taking care of all the internet and the marketing stuff so that everything has its place in my day so that I'm not overwhelmed by any of it, hopefully. Mm-hmm. And so I can finish each day, you know, in a healthy place. And I'm not, because I know, you know, because I definitely don't observe that perfectly all the time. And there comes a point where I am doing too much in one area, usually the business side. And I can tell, you know, I'm run down, I'm out of steam, and I've lost, you know, I'm losing my energy for the creative stuff as well. So it's very important to me to protect, like I've said, my creativity and to kind of to think of it as, you know, a child, as something that I have to nurture and take care of every day. For me, it's really important to make sure that I'm prioritizing that and nurturing it and protecting it and feeding it every single day. And if I can keep that healthy, you know, because I'm doing all of that, then that is what allows me to have, you know, the energy to pursue something as far as longevity goes, you know, on a long-term basis.
No, that's great. And then just about blogging, as I mentioned, you know, you and I have both been blogging as nonfiction authors for a long time now, but we're also fiction authors. So what is your opinion and I guess what part does blogging play in your nonfiction life versus your fiction life?
Well, I started blogging way back, like you said, basically just because at that point the mantra was every writer needs a blog. That was like the thing that you were supposed to do that was magically supposed to, you know, jumpstart your whole book marketing. So of course I did it. And, as you know, most authors are confused about what to actually write. What am I going to write that's actually going to interest people? So I tried a couple of different things, but what interested me most, obviously, was the writing. So I just kind of started sharing about things I was learning and where I was at in my writing. And, it took off, obviously, on its own and became its own thing. But I'm just, on a personal level, I'm just so thankful for the blog because I have probably, I mean, I know I have learned far more from it than anyone who reads it has. And, you know, I'm sure you've heard it too, the statement that those who can do and those who can't teach. And I totally disagree with it. I think that's absolute nonsense because nothing has taught me more than teaching. Mm. I know for a fact that I would never have, you know, been spurred on to learn some of the things that I have pursued and then to have to actually iterate them in a way that they have become part of me much more deeply than they would have if I just read them, you know, in someone else's book and moved on. So my blog has been just an absolute huge blessing to me on so many levels. Allowed me to connect with so many great people, including yourself, and so many great readers. And it's a joy to be able to help other people in their process. But if I'm being totally honest, you know, the best thing about it is how much it has helped me and challenged me to be a better writer.
Oh, no, I think that's great. And it is interesting, isn't it? Because I say, like, for a fiction author, you just don't have to blog. Like, I just don't believe you do anymore.
Yeah.
I actually think you're probably better off writing novellas, you know, using your words to write more fiction and put it out there. But I, as I say that, I'm also like, do you know what? My blog changed my life.
Yeah, exactly.
It really did. And I wouldn't be without it. You know, it plays a very significant part in my income. But, you know, as you say, I get to do my podcast and meet and network with people. And that does help sell fiction and also other books. And yeah, I've learned so much too. So, you know, what do you recommend to people? Do you say, yes, it's a good idea still, or do you say it's not?
Well, that's a really good point. And I agree with it. You know, I think that the vast majority of people who start a blog, that it's probably not going to be super helpful to them in their marketing efforts. But then, you know, you have one out of every 10 people who, you know, for whatever reason, it connects and it takes off and it turns into a really good thing for them on, you know, on the marketing level, but also on a personal level. So ultimately, I think it's a very subjective bit of advice. But for people who are drawn to the idea of blogging and have ideas about things that they want to share, then I say, yes, definitely. You'll probably find it rewarding in and of itself.
Mm.
And then hopefully it'll also take off and do, you know, be helpful to you as a platform. If you're resistant to the idea of blogging, you have no idea what you want to blog about, and you just hate the whole idea, then don't. There are so many, you know, options open to us as authors right now for other things we can do to build our platform and write a book. So I think that it definitely hasn't been something that's been super helpful to me as a fiction author. So I, you know, I can attest to that, and I would say that, you know, if you're not interested in it on its own merits and attracted to it, and you don't think that you'll find it personally rewarding, that you can probably find some better ways to invest your time for marketing your book.
Yeah. Oh, well, you know, I'm really grateful for your blog. I think you share all kinds of really interesting stuff. So why don't you just tell people a bit more about what they can find at your site and what other books you have there?
Yes. So I post twice a week. I post on Mondays and Fridays. And my site is totally focused on writing how-to craft. I don't get into the business side of that, mostly because you do such a good job of it that I just send people over there. But yeah, I post a lot. I'm really into story theory and the whole idea of creating strong story structure and using that to create strong character arcs. And just really exploring the intricacies of the practicalities of writing. And if we do this, then this will help readers feel the way we want them to and react the way we want them to. So I'm always studying and breaking down books and movies and using them as examples of why this works and why this doesn't work. And I actually have my first online writing course coming out pretty soon here, probably today, actually.
Oh.
Mastering Character Arcs, so that's kind of exciting. And then I'm going to be working on a Character Arcs book for later this year because I know a lot of people have been wanting that. And then on a more personal level, I'm actually going to be starting outlining my next book, which will be a sequel to my Portal Fantasy Dreamlander here pretty soon. So I've been taking a break this month, so I've got to get back in the harness here, full blown here next week.
Fantastic. So just remind people again where they can find you and your books and your websites online.
Yes. So my writing website is helpingwritersbecomeauthors.com. And if you're interested in my fiction, you can find more about that on my personal site, which is KM Weiland, which is, my name is spelled WEILAND.com. And of course, you can find all the books on Amazon and Barnes & Noble and, you know, all of those online retailers.
Fantastic. Well, thanks so much for your time, Katie. That was great.
Well, thanks for having me. It was a lot of fun.
Thanks for listening today. I hope you found it helpful. You might also like the backlist episodes at thecreativepen.com/podcasts. You can also get your free author 2.0 blueprint at thecreativepen.com/blueprint. If you'd like to connect, you can tweet me at The Creative Pen or find me on Facebook at The Creative Pen. See you next time.